And welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight. Good to have your company. Jody Hoffman with you in the studio this hour, and Law Matters is brought to you each fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Been on air for 16 years. I don't know where that's gone. Shout out to our stations that also take this program. 6DBY in Derby, Western Australia, Wurundjeri Media in Kununurra in the States North, and nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Boy, have we got a lot to get through on the program today. Shortly on the program, I'm having a yarn with Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Tragically, an Aboriginal woman is the second death in custody at the Bandyup prison in Perth, Western Australia, since March. Two women have died inside that facility in less than 5 weeks. I'll be chatting with Megan about that and what the government needs to be doing to put an end to deaths in custody, because there has been at least 630 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was handed down. And we're heading up towards the Anzac Day weekend, so we're going to meet some really interesting folk, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing from Di Ryder, OAM. Di is a Whadjuk and Yuwud Noongar and Yamaji elder, and she served in the army between 1974 and 1995. We're also heading up to sunny Cairns to meet a fella by the name of Ray Rosendale, a very well-respected First Nations veteran there as well. Looking forward to that. And because it is Anzac Day, I thought it was only appropriate that we kicked off the program with this version of the Anzac Ode, recited in English and in Noongar by Professor Len Collard.
Kaya, my name's Len Collard. I'm a Whadjuk traditional owner from the what people know as the Swan River, or what us Noongars call the Bizidabuja, that is the riverlands, commonly referred to as the Swan River. And my task today is to read out the ode, the Anzac Ode. This rendition is both in Australian and in Noongar. And hopefully in the future we'll see other Aboriginal Islander as well as global language groups translate the Australian ode into their languages. They shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning we shall remember them. Ba yuat manjang kulin, yai ngalakin ali nicha nyinin manjang wut kulin. Manjang yuat kulamut balang, manjang yuat waragabut buduan. Nicha ngang wut kulin ngarungundin, buddha beneng ngalak kadich balang. Thank you.
Professor Len Collard there, reciting the Anzac Ode in Noongar and in English. And we acknowledge and pay our respects to our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander veterans who served in all theatres of war in this country. This is the Law Matters program, and we welcome to it Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Megan, thank you for your time. I know it's been a busy week. Thanks for joining us on Law Matters. Unfortunately, we do have to talk about another tragic death in custody. An Aboriginal woman is the second death in custody at the Bandy Up Women's Prison in Middle Swan, a Perth suburb, within 5 weeks. It's an absolute tragedy, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely horrific. It's really quite sad, and it just shows that there's no political will at this point to address the issues. For example, the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody with the 339 recommendations still haven't been implemented in its totality, whether it's Commonwealth, whether it's the various jurisdictions, state, territory and so forth. There needs to be more emphasis on that to ensure that those implemented, and even then, there needs to be more community consultations right across the country there to find out exactly what is going on and how we can actually address this issue, because, as you know, the number of people that are taking their lives, that are dying in custody, has increased, and therefore, in terms of closing the gap, incarceration has not reduced at all. So that's really quite tragic. Secondly, in terms of state, prisoner health. That's carried by Department of Justice, Department of Corrective Services. Prisoner health needs to come back to the health department. See, Jody, what happens is that if a person who's going into prison once you're being received, if they've been to Fiona Stanley Hospital for issues, if they've been to Royal Perth Hospital for issues, if they've gone to Joondalup Health Campus for other medical issues, once a person's received into the prison system does not have access to those records. So there's a huge disconnect there, and that's why I'm saying in terms of the health department, that needs to take carriage of every single person in the prisons under the Department of Health, so there is that information that's available once a person is received. Because you don't know if a person has heart problems or if they've been attended to in a hospital, because the state records aren't availed to Department of Corrective Service. That's a major flaw in itself.
There are growing calls for a transparent review of WA's Bandy Up Women's Prisons, with advocates claiming that the deaths point to systemic issues that must be urgently examined. Megan Cracker, at least 630 Aboriginal deaths in custody since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was handed down 35 years ago. Our condolences, of course, to the two most recent Aboriginal women in Western Australia. What message do you have for our families and for our people on the inside?
For those on the inside, stay strong. I know there's lots of challenges and so forth. I've mixed in the prison system quite a bit. And quite a lot, actually, and interacted with many people that's coming out of the prison system. You are loved, you are appreciated. And if you feel like you need some medical assistance, please let your people know in the prison, but also let one of the officers know and get some medical attention. And to our community, it's tough. It's tough because we feel powerless. We feel powerless when a person's inside. We can't do much unless we go through the Aboriginal Prison Scheme, but as mothers, as parents, as fathers, as brothers and sisters, there's limited amount of things that we can do, particularly for a person, except be there for them when they come out and obviously ensure that the visits are there and also the phone calls. So those that have a loved one in the prison system, ensure that there is that connectivity, ensure that there's the phone calls and so forth. We're stronger than that as a people, but there are some systemic barriers that are precluding us from ensuring that lives are being kept safe.
And we also know, Megan, that, you know, our mob are so overrepresented in prisons. Our women, our men, our children are over-policed in this state. Too many people are behind bars that shouldn't be behind bars. You regularly work with the families of, you know, who have lost somebody in custody. It must have been a very horrendous last few weeks dealing with families for yourself and your organisation.
Yeah, it's been really quite tough. We just love and care about people. But the other thing too, Jodie, which I must say, in terms of national agreements with COAG, with Melandiri McCarthy as one of the co-chairs, We need the Aboriginal Medical Service to be able to go into the prisons and claim their Medicare rebates. That is not happening in its totality in Western Australia. For example, Derby Yerrigan, other Aboriginal medical services in Western Australia could go into the prisons and get their Medicare rebate if some kind of agreement was struck. So therefore, there needs to be accountability back to the national agreement in terms of some of the Aboriginal people that are representing our people on that to ensure that Medicare is available to our people in the prison system. There's no excuses. We can't keep dancing and talking about the same thing when there are available options there to ensure the implementation and therefore save lives.
All right. Our condolences to those who have lost somebody in custody. And for our listeners, you know, stay strong. We'll give you the number for anyone who may be affected. 13 Yarn is 139276. These are phone lines, 24-hour emergency crisis lines. How that you will get answered by MOB, 139276. No problem is too big or too small to have a yarn about. Megan, I know that you're very busy, so I just want to touch very quickly on, you mentioned Malindari McCarthy, who was, of course, present at Reclaim This Space in Forest Place, where MOB got together a couple of weeks ago to reclaim the space where there was the act of terror on Survival Day, Invasion Day, 26th of January in Boolloo. It was nice to bring people back together, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really quite nice and it was honourable, and it actually showed that there was political will to come and meet with people, you know, in community. Too often a lot of our people are saying, oh, the politicians won't come to the table and meet with us. Well, we had so many politicians at that particular event that came to the people. So that was really quite pleasing. That's the first time it's happened in Western Australia of that sheer size. And in fact, I'd go so far and say right across the country for that amount of politicians to come out in the one location to say, hey, I'm here, I support, what can I do? And so that was really quite good in terms of bringing together.
It really was. And look, just in wrapping up with you, Megan Cracker, very disturbing footage doing the rounds over the last week. Disturbing. A 13-year-old girl, Aboriginal girl, being pinned to the floor, thrown into a train seat by an off-duty WA police officer. The video shows him restraining her on the floor before throwing her into a seat, causing her to hit her head on the window. Thankfully, the incident has sparked public outcry. What were your views when you viewed the footage?
When I first seen it, someone sent it through to me on Facebook and I was absolutely appalled. It was really quite sad. And I thought there needs to be serious action taken here, because this type of action or excessive force is not permissible. It's not community standards and it's therefore abuse of power. I've seen a young Aboriginal girl and, you know, young Aboriginal people on that particular train, and then you have a person who obviously, in my mind, and I haven't been able to investigate properly, but it would appear on the surface of it that there was an abuse of power in terms of his size, his age, and the young 13-year-old girl. Some of it was very unnecessary. It shows that they have problems, and I'm talking about the police or even the transit guards, because the transit guards, they are responsible for the for a lot of abuses that happens on the trains. It shows that there's no cultural awareness. There's no true understanding and accountability in terms of the escalation of situations, and that, I'm thankful, has received so much attraction across the country, because that was just heinous, it was cruel, it was wrong. And there has to be some pushback in terms of how it's dealt with, and particularly the person who was on, you know, causing that type of harm to that young girl.
Yeah. Megan Cracker.
And, you know, the other thing that I'll say, Dodie, is that that does nothing except causes further mistrust between Aboriginal people and the police, and definitely the transit guards.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Megan Cracker, thank you as always for your time.
Thank you, Dodie. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Megan Cracker joining us here on Law Matters, and she's such a busy, busy woman, and so much strength and support provided to our community in the hardest of times. Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. And we're just touching then on the disturbing footage that was posted online, which showed a 13-year-old girl, an Aboriginal girl, being pinned to the floor and thrown into a train seat by an off duty WA police officer. In a statement recently, the National Commissioner for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Children and Young People, Sue Ann Hunter, condemned the use of unreasonable force by the officer. She said this is a representation of the violence that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and young people can face every day, and as a nation we have to do better to protect them. She said the video is an example of the damaging, entrenched colonial attitudes towards First Nations peoples, which leads to our children being demonised and dehumanised. The National Commission called on the WA Police to immediately conduct an investigation into this matter. The Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children and young people have the right to feel safe in their communities. And Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner Katie Kiss said that the incident highlights further our calls for a federal mechanism to conduct independent investigations into both deaths in custody and critical incidents. There must be accountability for those in positions of authority and power who use unnecessary force or cause harm or death. This is the Law Matters program, big program coming your way for the rest of the hour. And, the tragedy that I was talking with Megan Cracker about, the second Aboriginal woman to die in custody in Western Australia. Bandyup is a women's prison in WA on Middle Swan Road in Middle Swan, just a suburb of Perth. Two Aboriginal women dying in custody in 5 weeks. There needs to be some urgent address for that. WA Greens leader Brad Pettit agrees that the government needs to review it, looking at what's going wrong and how they can make sure that this does not happen again. He said that when you've got two young women, 35 and 40 years of age, dying in a prison in a short time apart, that is a big problem, and he has called for a review into those deaths as well. The list of people advocating for change is just enormous, so let's hope that the government takes all of that on board and we see this an end come to it as soon as possible. Let's have a listen to Ruby Hunter, a song called Let My Children Be.
Let my children be, let them free. I just want to see they're a part of me. Let my children be, let them free. I just want to see they're a part of me. They got custody, I saw the hell. My expense. We had our children, we had our life, we had our differences, now we live different lives. Let my children be, let them free. I just want to see their.
Oh, yeah. The beautiful late Ruby Hunter. What an amazing woman she was. And a song called Let My Children Be. Very timely, I think, with what we've been talking about on the program today. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, broadcasting nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Thank you for your company. And we couldn't do a program at this time of year, around Anzac Day, which is on the 25th of April, without meeting some people who've made great contributions to our country. And our next guest is very humbled and proud to have served both his country and his people, and I'd like to welcome to the program very respected First Nation veteran Ray Rosendale. Ray, welcome to Law Matters. How are you?
Thank you, Jodie. I'm well, and I am humbled to be able to speak about our people and our sacrificed service to this country.
We are going nationally, Ray, so let's start by saying where you're from, who's your mob?
So I'm a very proud Gugulangi man from North Queensland, just to the north of Cairns, closely related with the Gugulangi people of Cooktown. And I'm also very proud of my Danish and English heritage as well.
You were in the Royal Australian Navy, Ray, Navy Strategic Advisor on Indigenous Cultural Affairs, a veteran of Kuwait. Tell us what made you get involved in the services.
I think as a young man, I was possibly a little lost in the world, and I was looking for something to belong to. And I'd had other family members and friends who'd been in the military, so I thought, I'll give that a shot. And I'm glad I did. It was a unique experience that gave me the skills that I have today.
Tell me what it was like and what you experienced as a First Nations peoples working alongside brothers and sisters within there, but also more mainstream people as well.
So I always start talking about things like this with just a disclaimer when people say we were all treated the same. We weren't. And by that I mean a private or a naval seaman doesn't get treated the same as a general or an admiral. But were we treated fairly within the service? On the most part, yes. And my experience was, as a young sailor, I found that regardless of background, the people I served with and for looked to the person and who they were and were willing to understand. There were a lot of people who'd never really met anyone of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander cultural heritage before. So for some people it was a new thing and they only knew what they'd seen on TV or heard. So it was a really challenging experience that I would say was well over 99% positive.
I'm very glad to hear that. I know from more senior veterans that I've spoken to from Western Australia, Ray, that, you know, did serve in various theatres of war, that they said that they just felt like they were one of the team when they were abroad. It was when they returned home to Australian soil that they noticed there was marked differences in entitlements, treatment, and in a lot of those days, you know, you couldn't go into the same bar as your non-Indigenous counterparts. So, you're about the same vintage as me. Did you have that experience as well as a younger person?
To a very small degree. And that was probably from people of an older generation again. I would say what they explained in that and what you just retold is correct. There were some horrible experiences for people. A lot of our Australian history of service for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders isn't really known, not even amongst our own people. For example, the Boer War, when men went to serve and were not allowed back into the country. When a Victorian soldier returned with his mates who treated him exactly the same as everybody else, his mates, wasn't allowed to have a parcel of land as a soldier, a returned soldier, and was sent off to the reserve, to the mission. The treatment was not right. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women denying their cultural history and who they were so they could serve the country. There's many stories of that right up until 1946 when they changed the laws.
My guest is First Nations veteran Ray Rosendale, joining us from Cairns in beautiful Queensland. And I know you're a very humble man, Ray, but I am going to let our listeners know that you have been the recipient of numerous awards, including the Conspicuous Service Medal, the Australian Active Service with Clasp for Kuwait, the Australian Service Medal with Clasps Solomon Island 2 and Bougainville, Australian Operational Service Medal, Border Protection, Defence Long Service Medal with First and Second Clasps, Australian Defence Medal. You must have been doing something right there, Ray.
I think I was a product of great parenting, a great community, a great family who encouraged me even when I was young. I may not have been the best student or the greatest athlete, but to get in and give things a go and to pay attention. And I think that's something my father and mother instilled in me very young. They were groundbreakers, an Aboriginal man marrying a European woman in the early 60s wasn't extremely common.
Mm.
And my father still lived on a mission where he had to have a pass.
Yeah.
So I grew in a family of people who were willing to challenge the status quo but to really learn and move forward, and I think that instilled in me a sense of get out there and give it a go and see how you go. And I've been very lucky, I've got to say. Many things happened to me during my career where I just seemed to be in the right place at the right time, but I'm very proud of the fact that I was allowed to do that in a country where there were many difficulties for so long.
Yeah. Before you joined the Navy in 1991, you were working as a stockman, an apprentice mechanic, a public servant as well. What did the Navy teach you? Because you were saying that, you know, not that you're off the rails, but you just needed a bit more focus in your life. What did the Navy teach you once you joined in 1991?
It gave me that sense of self-discipline that I was lacking, where I would commit to something and see it through. Whether I succeeded or not, I would see it through and learn. And I think that was the greatest thing. That and the ability to have friendships with people I never would have had with before and still do. Some of my greatest friends are veterans who wouldn't be considered in the same political sense that I think. They think differently to me. But we're still friends, we're still mates, we respect each other. So I think those things, respect for others and that self-discipline to get out and have a go, even in the face of failing at something.
I'm chatting with Ray Rosendale from Cairns, a First Nations veteran. Of course, it is Anzac Day on the 25th of April. What does Anzac Day mean to you, Ray?
It's a time for us to remember the terrible things that happened, not just to the country, but to the world, to individuals, to our people, some of the things that happened in World War One, World War Two, and the way people were treated, particularly in the north, being forced to go to the south and not being trusted by their own country. For me, though, it shows that our people still stood up. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women still represented their country because they were proud of who they are. They were proud to serve the country because they believe in country. It was a very strong thing for me, even when I speak now to younger people, that belief in country is what focuses me on Anzac Day, that the willingness to sacrifice for others and then to make the world a better place through that sacrifice.
I know that your Navy time and experience and friendships made must have been a very life-changing journey for you. Would you recommend the services to our mob?
Yes. Don't be afraid of the unknown. That is probably the biggest thing I learned to speak to about other people, young people who want, and not so young, who want to have a go at Army or Navy or Air Force. Don't be afraid of that unknown. Take it on and show people who you are, who we are as people, who we are as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders and as Australians.
You initially joined as a quartermaster gunner before transferring to firefighter in 94 and then to the Naval Police Coxswain in 96. You served in Her Majesty's Australian ships in Canberra, Whyalla, Shepparton, Ipswich, Turrican, Darwin and Hydrographic Service Crew Red. You also served as a senior Naval Police Coxswain in HMAS Watson and Cairns and with a Navy instructor at the Service Police School at Holsworthy, New South Wales in 2007. A very busy career. What keeps you busy these days, Ray Rosendale?
Currently I'm working with the charity Movember around men's health. Particularly, I've taken on the position as the Australian Indigenous Programs Manager, working with our communities to deliver programs of social emotional well-being that'll benefit our men, our families and our communities for allowing them to decide what they need to do to make the world a better place for them, how they can improve their own lives through their own strengths, and providing programs that give that community-led, community-directed, culturally competent understanding of what they're dealing with in their lives and how they can have the strengths and how they can make their lives better. That's the occupation for me, and I'm loving doing that at the moment.
Wow, what a rich career you've had. What's your message to our First Nations veterans who might be listening in around the country?
I think our veterans should be very proud of themselves, and I encourage them to stand up and show the world who they are and what they did, because they are courageous. They were groundbreakers. They led their communities even if they didn't feel like they did. They showed something that I believe is special, and that they deserve to stand up and be proud of who they are and get out there and show people that it's tough. There's lots of challenges. There are things that you're going to not like, but it's worth doing.
Oh, Ray, it's been lovely meeting you on the program today. I wish we had more time to chat, but we are going to be meeting another extraordinary person in a few minutes' time on the program when we have a yarn with Di Ryder OAM, who is a Wadjuk and Yuwud Noongar and Yamaji elder who served in the army between 1974 and 1995. So to you, Ray Rosendahl, we say thank you for your service. Thank you for your time. Do you have any final message for our listeners?
Only that our people have been here, will be here. We are resilient. We know how to fix the problems that face the world. Stand up, be proud, and go ahead and do that.
Good on you. Ray Rosendahl, all the very best to you. Lovely to meet you today on the program.
Thank you very much, Adi, and I hope everyone gets out and commemorates Anzac Day in the spirit that it deserves to be commemorated.
Before I do let you go, you were a former board member of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Veterans Association. What does that do for our mob?
As a service organisation, it focuses on the uniqueness of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander veterans to support our veterans to access the services and help that's available out there, to help them with the things that are uniquely focused on by our veterans. A lot of the service organisations do that for different groups, and that's what ATSEVA does, is focuses Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander veterans' concerns and issues and helps our veterans to take that step that they need if they need it, or to provide those services.
Good stuff. Ray Rosendahl, all the best to you. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
First Nations veteran Ray Rosendahl joining us from Cairns today on Law Matters. What a lovely bloke. And, yeah, there's so many stories out there, aren't they? So it's wonderful to be in a position where we can help bring those stories to you, the listener. We will be meeting Di Ryder OAM in a couple of minutes. But first, let's have a listen to this one from Casey Donovan, a song called Defying Gravity.
Something has changed. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts. Defy
She's a talent, is Casey Donovan.
See you soon.
Defying gravity. Ah, this is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Good to have your company, and a jam-packed program today, and I'm loving talking to these amazing people that are out in the community working tirelessly, and our next guest is no exception. Welcoming to the program right now, Di Ryder, OAM, Wadjuk and Yuid Noongar and Yamaji Elder. Di, thank you for your time. A busy week, I know. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. Yeah, very busy, but it's all good stuff. So promoting Aboriginal people within Anzac Day is very good, and I, you know, try and do it every year. So, yeah, it's good. Thank you.
Life is busy, isn't it? I mean, I'd imagine, you know, with Anzac Day, so important, and, you know, the word is filtering out more and more every year about the contributions of First Nations people in every theatre of war. We were there, weren't we?
We were definitely there right from the beginning. When you look back to the Boer War, we had, even here in WA, there were two that have been identified, Robert Searle and there was Private Brockman. I'm not sure of his first name. That goes back to the Boer War. And then, of course, World War One. And last year we honoured nine World War One Aboriginal soldiers who were killed in action, or eight killed in action, one who died from injuries, I think, or illness at the Indigenous Veterans Service up at King's Park, which we run each year during Reconciliation Week. So this year it's on the 27th of May.
Okay, we'll keep that on our calendars. And, of course, the 25th of April is Anzac Day. Di Ryder, where are you from? Because we've got national listeners. Tell us about where you're from in WA.
Okay, grew up Bindoon, mainly 2J, so the age of five, I think. We moved to 2J, mum and dad, seven kids in tow, and then there was another four, so I'm one of 11 children, all still alive. Mum and dad have both passed. So basically 2J, I think I call home most of the time, and that's where, you know, early years and teenage years, and then, worked with Native Welfare, then joined the Army.
Wow.
That's near where it says, yeah.
And you're in the Army from 1974 to 1995. Why did you decide to join the Army?
Well, the main thing was that I couldn't get a job in 2J. I then worked with my amazing mum, who was working, even though she had 11 kids at home, at the chicken farm. And I thought, oh, I don't want to do this. Then got a job with Native Welfare. Now, I tell you what, in the early 70s, the policies were still in. And I thought, oh, I just can't do this for the rest of my life or anything like this. So I applied for the Army and got in 74. So, but not only that, my brother Mark had already been in. And then he told me what Army life was like, and I thought, oh, that'll give me a good chance to do something different, and decided to join. So, yeah, 74, I joined up.
So over 20 years, and also in the Women's Royal Australian Army Corps, the Royal Australian Corps of Transport, and the Royal Australian Army Ordnance Corps, what was your experiences like during those years as a First Nations woman?
Well, it was, you know, training, obviously. We went to Mossman, Sydney Harbour. So it was very cold. It was June, in the middle of the year, freezing cold. But that 5 weeks, was amazing. It taught me that I was resilient. That, you know, as a young woman going from first time on the plane and getting there and being yelled at and thinking, what the hell am I doing here? To actually working out that after those 5 weeks that you know, I had skills and I had resilience, and I was able to then do driver training, and from there got my first posting, which unfortunately was back here to Perth, you know. Join the Army, see you Australia. Yeah, no, not really, but you know, a couple of good years here, and then I went back to the Women's Royal Australian Army Corps School at Mossman and spent a couple of years there as well.
How are you treated? I mean, I was talking to our previous guest, Ray, who joined us from Cairns, and talked about his experiences in the Navy. And we both were of the impression that it was the more senior people within our community, from people I've spoken to over the years, who would now be, you know, very elderly, if they were still alive, who talked about there was a great brother and sisterhood while they were abroad. It was only when they returned home that they were treated differently. They didn't get the same parcels of land. They didn't get the same entitlements. They felt that there was an us and them when they returned back that they didn't feel while they were in the services.
Look, it was good most of the time, but I've got to tell you what, there was certainly racism there that did raise its head. And that's individual people. And sometimes that was people in rank, superior rank than me. And that always caused a problem because then it filtered down. And for me, it had an impact when I worked very hard, and I worked very hard because of the way I was brought up by my mum and dad and the work ethics and mutual respect. But it only took one person. But, you just do the best that you can and hopefully you get posted away or they get posted away in the end. But, it was good. It was a good life. But, racism did exist at times, not all the time. But it was a good life and taught me a lot about myself and, certainly set me up for the future as far as, thinking outside the square and being able to now work in my community and volunteer, many volunteer roles.
My guest is Di Ryder OAM, who was inducted into the WA Women's Hall of Fame in 2024, the first female veteran to be inducted. That must have been a very proud day for you, Di.
Oh, it was. It was amazing. When I think back, to my service, but to be the first female veteran, not Aboriginal veteran, the first female veteran, and that in itself is quite an honour, and to be inducted to the WA Women's Hall for doing stuff in community that I actually love doing and I've been doing it for a long time now. It was amazing. And I think for me, it's about us coming together, not just as Aboriginal people or Noongar people, it's about all us coming together as a community, because that's the way we make a difference of unifying and being together as one.
I remember some years ago now, Di, it would be well over 20 years ago, and I was doing some work for the Courier Mail in Perth and went into the Anzac Day parade in Perth, and it was the first year that our Indigenous veterans had led the march. And, oh, my God, the hairs on my arms stood up. It was such an emotional time. Were you around in Perth at that time?
I was, but I didn't know much about it at that stage. I wasn't part of the association or had much to do with what was happening back then. I think it was early. Yeah, it was early 2000s, wasn't it?
And it really showed the emotion of what it actually meant for our mob to be recognised as, hey, we were there too. We were in every theatre of war. We did our bit. We just didn't get the acknowledgement that so many other people did. So there was just a collective pride that was really beautiful to see. And it's wonderful that our mob are getting more and more recognised as time goes on, people like yourselves, for everything that you did do in the services.
Yeah, it is amazing for us to be recognised out there that we did it. Yeah, you're right, we did serve. We were there. And I think that's the biggest thing that needs to be acknowledged. And, when you look at what happened last year with the Welcome to Country in Melbourne, and certainly over here, I did the acknowledgement last year for the Dawn Service. A little bit disappointing, but I just think that, if we go on, plot on and do what we need to do, then the message is continual. We're not giving up and just saying, well, I'm not going to do it this year because of, but to go back and say, we can do this.
Yeah,
and to have that recognition there that we did right from the Boer War in every conflict and, war, peacekeeping and in peacetime, we were always there.
Yeah.
And I think that really does need to be acknowledged.
Di Ryder is my guest, Di Ryder OAM. Di, this year, I want to hear about this, marks 10 years since you recited the Ode of Remembrance at the AFL Dockers versus Carlton game, the Anzac Day game. Tell us about that.
That was just amazing. It was just like standing out there in front, I think there was 30 or 40,000 people, and just to look out there and to when it happened, the silence for one thing. But it wasn't nervousness because Army teaches you that in whatever you do, you focus on one point. It doesn't matter what's happening around you, and this is what happens when you're on a parade ground, focus on one point to where you can look because you don't need to be your eyes going here and there, because if you're on a parade and the RSM looks at you, he'll tell you off later on.
Yeah.
Or she would. But it was just an amazing feeling to be out there on the ground to recite the ode during that time, and to have, you know, so many people around. And, yeah, it was another amazing thing that I've experienced. And, yeah, it was, yeah. Wonderful. I'm not sure if Docker's won, but just to be part of it was an amazing thing for me.
Oh, Di Ryder, you've had so much recognition and well-deserved. Need to let our listeners know that you have been the recipient of the Defence Force Service Medal, the Australian Defence Medal, the 1990 Australia Day Medallion, 2009 Perth NAIDOC Outstanding Achievement Award, same year City of Swan Active Citizenship Award, 2014 you were elected President of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Veteran and Services Association of WA, at 2014-15 acknowledged at the Midland NAIDOC Community Awards, NAIDOC Lifetime Achievement Award nationally in 2017, and in 2023 you were awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia, hence OAM behind your name. You must be very proud. I know you're a humble woman, but you must be very, very proud.
Oh, I'm proud. No, I always, I'm getting emotional here, to be honest. I always thank my parents, even though they're passed, because of what they taught us growing. It's,
yeah.
I think that if we can remember where we come from and who actually taught us is why we're doing it, and we keep going, so our kids can get that too, our grandkids.
Look, they must have been very, very proud. And you said you're one of 11 siblings, is it?
Yes, one of 11 children.
Wow. So, you can
And all still here, which is an amazing thing. And I always put that down to Mum and Dad and our strong upbringing, because of how they gave us so much. You know, not money-wise, not anything, but made sure we were looked after and everything was there for us.
Yes.
And taught us so much that we were, you know, we all achieved in our own way, in our own right. And I think that that's it, that we keep remembering our ancestors, our families, the ones that went before us, because of their struggles make us who we are today.
Yeah.
And that we can then pass it on to our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids, that they too can achieve, doesn't matter what's happening out there, that we all can get to that point where we are achieving.
Your involvement, Di, with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Veterans and Services Association of WA, what does that actually do? What's its role?
Well, we did have a more prominent role many years ago when we had a lot of Vietnam vets and Korean vets who served on the committee. Unfortunately, due to the fact that all of them have passed, I'm the last man standing, I think you'd say, because the fact is that I just can't get the younger ones to step up, to actually, not step up, but when we look at some of them who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder and other things that are happening in their lives, it takes a lot to be actually on a committee. Although, you know, I'd like to see more happening, but I focus mainly on the Indigenous Veterans Service, or the Aboriginal Veterans Service, I've called this year, which happens to do a Reconciliation Week, which what we've been doing since 2006.
Yeah.
To keep the acknowledgement and the respect and of our servicemen and women who went before us. Yeah. So that's been going on for such a long time that we keep it going, so that we can continue keeping the word out there that we did contribute. We were there and we did serve. I'd like to see more members come along and help out if they can. That would be great, because I'm in my early 70s now, and as I get older, I'd like someone to step up and take on the role, but until there, I'll keep putting one foot in front of the other to make sure we keep going.
We've got a couple of minutes left of the program only, Di, but what does Anzac Day mean to you?
Anzac Day means my coming together with my friends, with my camaraderie. It means celebrating who we are as Australians, but in those who have served, and to honour and respect those, first of all, who lost their lives in battle or, you know, paid the supreme sacrifice. You know, a lot of them came home with psychological and you know, different problems. We need to acknowledge them, but we also need to acknowledge our families, the families of those veterans, because, you know, sometimes the pain and suffering may never be healed for them. And so that's what Anzac Day means to me, is about respecting and acknowledging what we've contributed to the defence of Australia.
And your message for our First Nations veterans around the country, Di?
Keep going and keep putting the word out there that we were there and we are there and we will continue to be there in the defence of Australia in whatever conflict or whatever comes along. And we welcome everything, that you know, every contribution from our veterans and our servicemen and women that are currently serving and those in the future that come along as well.
Oh, Di, it's been really lovely to have a yarn with you today on Law Matters. Di Ryder, OAM, Wadjuk and Yuwud Noongar and Yamaji Elder. What an extraordinary contribution you've made to this country. I know that you are still very active in your early 70s. With 60 seconds to go, what else keeps you busy at this time?
Well, I do every year. I do a blanket drive, and I've probably got out thousands of blankets over the last 12 years. I do domestic violence march here in the city of Swan. I'm involved in lots of committees and lots of things in community, and that's what keeps me active. And my two gorgeous grandsons and my son and daughter-in-law. So yes.
Beautiful.
Keep me busy.
Your parents must have been so, so proud. Congratulations on all of your achievements and all of your contributions, Di. And we'll be thinking of you and all of our other veterans on Anzac Day 2026. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Jodie. Thank you.
What a beautiful woman, Di Ryder, OAM, sharing some of her reflections on serving in the Army from 1974 to 1995. That wraps up Law Matters for another fortnight. Thank you for your company from myself, Jodie Hoffman. Take care, look after each other, and we'll be back here in a fortnight's time.